Slavery in New England by Miss Sedgwick, narrated by Christine Dahl. Mr. Sedgwick was a member of the state legislature and absent from his home on duty at Boston. His family were transferred to a place free from danger or annoyance, all his family, with the exception of the servants and one young invalid child, Mumbet's pet. Leave her castle she would not, and her particular treasure she felt able to defend. She adopted a rather feminine mode of defense. She drew her bars and bolts, hung over the kitchen fire a large kettle of beer, and sounded her trump of defiance, the declaration that she would scald to death the first invader. The insurgents knew she would keep her word, and on that occasion, they preserved their distance. The fear of personal molestation having subsided, the family returned to their home. They were not, however, secure from levies by the honest insurgents and thefts by the dishonest. For them all, Mumbet had an aristocratic contempt. She did not recognize their new-made honor, but accoutred and decked as they were in epaulettes and ivy boughs, they were to her Nick Bottom the weaver, Robin Starveling the tailor, Tom Snout the tinker, etc. The captain of a company, with two or three subalterns, came to Mr. Sedgwick's with the intent to capture Jenny Gray, a beautiful young mare, esteemed too spirited for any hand but the master of the family, and gentle as a dog in his hand, Mumbet would say. So a cowardly serving man obeyed the order to bring Jenny Gray from the stable and saddle and bridle her. Mumbet stood at the open house door, keenly observing the procedure. The captain, with much difficulty, for the animal was snorting and restive, mounted. But whether from an instinct of repulsion or from some magnetic sign from Mumbet, I suspect the latter, she reared and plunged and threw her unskilled rider on the turf behind her. Again the captain mounted and again was thrown. The third time he essayed with like default. Then, having got some hard bruises, he stood off and hesitated. While he did so, Mumbet started out, unbuckled the saddle, threw it on one side, and leading Jenny Gray to a gate that opened into a wide field skirting a wooded, unfenced upland, she slipped off the bridle, clapped Jenny on the side, and whistled her off. And off she went, careering beyond the hope of Captain Smith, the joiner. Alas, Jenny Gray was not always so fortunate. One dark night she disappeared from the stable, and the last that was seen of her, she was galloping away into the state of New York, bearing one of the shay leaders from the pursuit of justice. On another occasion, when a party of marauders were making their domiciliary visits to the houses of the few gentry in the village, they entered Mr. Sedgwick's and demanded the key of the cellar. In those days, the distance now traversed in a few hours was a week's journey. The supplies of tomorrow, now sent from New York on the order of today, were then laid in semi-annually, and Mr. S.'s cellar was furnished for 6 months' unstinted hospitality. Mumbet led the party, embodying the dignity of the family in her own commanding manner. She adroitly directed their attention first to a store of bottled brown stout. One of the men, knocking off the neck of a bottle, took a draught and pithily expressed his abhorrence of the bitter stuff. "How should you like what gentlemen like?" she asked in a tone of derision, bitterer than the brown stout. Is there nothing better here? They asked. Gentlemen want nothing better, she answered with contempt. And they, partly disappointed, but more crestfallen, turned back and left untasted liquor, which they would have been as ready as Caliban to swear was not earthly, was celestial liquor. She managed her defensive warfare to the end with equal adroitness. She had secreted the watches and few trinkets of the ladies and small articles of plate in a large oaken chest containing her own wardrobe, no contemptible store either. Bet had a regal love of the solid and the splendid wear, and to the last of her long life went on accumulating chintzes and silks. When, after tramping through the house, they came to Bet's locked chest and demanded the key, she lifted up her hands and laughed in scorn. Ah, Sam Cooper, she said, you and your fellows are no better than I thought you. You call me wench and nigger, and you are not above rummaging my chest. You will have to break it open to do it. Sam Cooper, a quondam broom peddler, to whom Bet had pointed out in their progress his worthless brooms rotting in the cellar, was the leader of the party. He turned, she said, and slunk away like a whipped cur as he was. We have marked a few striking points along the course of her life, but its whole course was like a noble river that makes rich and glad the dwellers on its borders. She was a guardian to the childhood, a friend to the maturity, a staff to the old age of those she served. More than once, by a courageous assumption of responsibility, by resisting the absurd medical usages of the time, in denying cold water and fresh air to burning fevers, she saved precious lives. The time came for leaving even the shadow of service, and she retired to a freehold of her own, which she had purchased with her savings. These had been rather freely used by her only child and her grandchildren, who, like most of their race, were addicted to festive joys. In the last act of the drama of life, when conscience upheaves the barren or the bloated past, and poor humanity quails, she met death, not as the dreaded tyrant, but as the angel messenger of God. Some of the orthodox pious felt a technical yet sincere concern for her. Even her worth required the passport of church membership. The clergyman of the village visited her with the rigors of the old creed and, presenting the terrors of the law, said, "Are you not afraid to meet your God?" "No, sir," she replied calmly and emphatically. "No, sir. I have tried to do my duty and I am not afeard." She had passed from the slavery of spiritual conventionalism into the liberty of the children of God. She lies now in the village burial ground, in the midst of those she loved and blessed, of those who loved and honored her. The first ray of the sun that, as it rose over the beautiful hills of Berkshire, was welcomed by her vigilant eye, now greets her grave. Its last beam falls on the marble inscribed with the following true words: Elizabeth Freeman, known by the name of Mum Bet, died December 28, 1829. Her supposed age was 85 years. She was born a slave and remained a slave for nearly 30 years. She could neither read nor write. Yet in her own sphere, she had no superior nor equal. She neither wasted time nor property. She never violated a truth nor failed to perform a duty. In every situation of domestic trial, she was the most efficient helper and the tenderest friend. Good mother, farewell.